Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We've got a party cast with Chris, Purnell, and Brooke. How's everyone doing?
It's just not the same.
Hey.
I'm still Purnell, though.
happy episode 9/11. Happy birthday, Brooke.
Thank you so much. As you all know, 9/11 is, in fact, my birthday. I picked this birthday on purpose so that no one would ever forget. And ever since I was in middle school, it served me very well. So... funny how that works out.
You're a wee, Brooke.
Yeah, I guess some people are just blessed, so.
Just like the...
Hashtag blessed.
That's me, baby.
Just like the Colossus Roar, repurposing a tragedy.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah.
What does that come
in? The Colossus Roar. We're not getting back into the Colossus Roar. We discussed that in the pre-show. Welcome to the SML Podcast.
I'm your host.
What's up, everybody? This is the
SML Podcast. I'm your host, the Colossus Roar.
The actual roar is
Oh,
the host.
Joe did it.
Nice.
I did very do cool. it. We have some business to take care of at the top of the show. For the people who are on our Twitch, you might notice there's a new icon below our video of a happy face for an energy drink mix company called Dubby. And we formed a partnership with them mainly by just filling out a form. And they're like, okay, you're approved. And I got some packets of this stuff in the mail. And I was going to try it live on the show.
Woo! Energy.
Well, what if it's not good? Then what?
Well, then that sucks for Dubby. We got three choices here. There's a mango white peach cooler, Granny Smith apple in secret sauce, and then dragon fruit and pink strawberry lemonade.
Nothing's topping the Granny Smith.
I don't know, man.
It's got super sauce.
Hey, I mean, you know, actually, he's right. So
one vote for Apple. Brooke, what's your vote?
Come on, Brooke.
Go for the pink
sauce.
One. I got to play devil's advocate here. My desktop is pink, and so it will my drink be. So,
all right, Chris, what's your vote?
What am I? Wait, what?
The three flavors. You get to vote on one.
Can I write in Bernie Sanders?
Yes, you can. So I guess I'll break the tie. I'll go with the dragon fruit and pink strawberry lemonade. So let's try this shit. Let's see how it is.
I guess we'll never know what the secret sauce is. Or you can mail it to me.
I can always try that in another episode. I don't have to only try one. I mean, then again, it might suck. I don't know.
But that violates the pact.
Hey, you know, it's my birthday. There's no rules, okay? Thank you.
If
you're interested
no
in trying
rules.
It for yourself before I try it, you can check out the link on our stream and use the coupon code GAPINGBEEHOLE to save 10%.
What?
That is a real coupon code. That is GAPINGBEEHOLE.
All right, then.
Save 10% off your W order. Let's try this stuff, see how it is.
Beehole. It is.
It's actually pretty good. It's a little on the chalky side, but they mention that it will be because of the quote vitamins and nutrients.
Vitamins.
But yeah, it tastes pretty good. I wish the packets were bigger because they advertise that it's good for 8 to 12 ounces of water, and a bottle of water is 16. I'd like drink half of it and then pour it in. But it's actually pretty good. I might order some more of this stuff.
Well, how many did they send you? Like 15 packs? Or one of each flavor?
I got 4 packs. One I have to save for Ashley because she wants to try it with me. And then the other two are sitting here, and the one I'm drinking, the pink lemonade.
I see. The couple of doobies together.
Yeah, it's actually it's decent. It's supposed to be for energy and jitter-free energy. I don't know if it's going to affect me at all in terms of energy with how much soda I drink.
But I'll say, well, considering that you drank it at this hour, yeah, I hope it doesn't affect you either.
Oh, so how was all of your weekends?
And I can sure use I use that secret sauce myself. I'm tired.
I'm on that level myself right now. I am freaking burnt. Weekend was okay. Job interview. Hate job interviews. Now I have to play the waiting game for that crap.
Mm-hmm.
Hate them. So I'm doing that. And I went to the arcade after a birthday party thinking I was going to play one or two games of the dance game because I haven't played in a while. And I ended up teaching a person how to play it for 3 hours instead because they play with that damn bar all the time. And they're not as tall as me, but she was like maybe 4 or 5 inches shorter than me. And she noticed that when I got up there to play, my old ass didn't use the bar. And she was like, how are you doing that? You can play without it? I was like, yeah, once upon a time, we all did. She's like, do you not use it just because you're too tall for the machine to use the bar prop? I was like, well, I mean, admittedly, I shouldn't be because I'm too tall for it, yes. But I also don't use it because I feel like it limits your mobility and you don't get as good exercise. And the game is just more fun to be able to move freely, like as you spin around and stuff. So she watched me play like 2 times, and I just noticed on the whim she just started trying to do it too. And she was struggling with it for a while. She was doing fine with the bar, but when she tried to not use the bar, she was having challenges. I'm like, oh, wow, you're actually going to give this a shot. That's awesome. Let me help. So I was like, okay, here's a song you can try as an example of this mechanism, like this, the core workout. So you can work out your core so that you can do proper spins, sometimes without having to adjust the upper part of your body. And I was like, you can work with that. But if you ever need to spin around fully without having to actually keep your balance, you could always use the bar for one hand just to kind of give yourself stability. And I was giving her all these pointers. And by the end of the night, she was actually busting it out. She was doing a lot better. And she actually said, thank you for teaching me. This is really fun. And I was like, no problem. Glad I could help. I just want to see more people enjoy the game. And then I went for a walk and an attempted jog. And I need to buy a new couch. Couch shopping is freaking sucky. Too many chairs. It's just so old now. It's at the point now where I sit down in it and I feel like my back's about to burst because it caves in. I've had this chair for like since 2012. And when I got it, it was used. So this couch is very old. And I just use it like this. I'm one of those people like almost like Al Bundy where he had the groove in his couch. I sit in the same spot every time without fail. I don't even use the other parts of the couch, which is probably why it's like it is now. Because just there was a once upon a time I was 300 pounds, then I was 250 pounds. I just ran the gamut of weights, and all of them came crashing down on the exact same place, the couch. Heaven help me if I came home from work tired one night where I jump and fall on the damn couch and it's like, and then, bam, that couch is like, why do you hate me so much? I'm like, no, it's with love, friend.
My sister will come over and she'll, like, jump on our couch. I'm like, Jesus, calm your ass down.
Like, you got a check in your pocket in case you break my damn couch? Otherwise, if you do, knock yourself out. I'm $1,000 because couches are not cheap. I went and looked. They were like, the average price for a good couch, not even a great couch, a good couch, they were like, is like, look, you're looking at $1,000 to like $2,500 for a good couch. I'm like, are you kidding me? For a couch? And they're like, yeah, but that's one of the most important pieces of furniture in your home, which is not a lie, honestly. Yeah, it is the second most important piece of furniture in your house. But
I don't know about second, because number one most important piece of furniture, toilet. Number one.
I'm considered toilet to be furniture, though. It's a
tool
for shitting.
You don't spend enough time in the bathroom, then.
It's a tool for shooting.
Some of us treat it like furniture. We go in and we relax.
They don't call it the throne for nothing.
Exactly.
Oh, nice. And there it is. There it is. I agree with Brooke's statement. Still don't call it furniture, though. I don't buy toilets from furniture stores. I buy them from Home Depot.
Brooke, how was your weekend?
It was cool, you know, played a little Dolphin Spirit, played a little, you know, I don't have my notes on the Japanese game, so I have to have those up before I read it, but I also played some Baldur's Gate, and I finally decided between Carlock and Will. I don't know if this means anything to y'all, if y'all are playing, but, you know, it's a major release game with dating in it, so you know I'm playing it.
I haven't been playing it, but I have been following up on your quandary.
Oof, so you might know that I ran a poll. I was like, guys, I can't pick between Carlock and Will. Please help me. And everyone voted for Carlock. But then, you know, the next day I was like, okay, I'm really sorry to everybody, but you guys basically made Will forbidden love. And like, now I want to go for Will.
You did the thing where you vetoed the... You're like, hey guys, Chuck, I need your help. And they're like, I'm going to do the opposite of what everyone said.
I know. I've actually never done that before, but I was like, I'm freaking 36 years old. It's okay if I run a poll and then I go for the dude who didn't win. But I still love Carla. She's my baby. I'm gonna do her second playthrough. And everybody's going nuts over Asterion. I know y'all seeing that, but he might be like playthrough 3 or 4 for me. I don't know. So, I don't know. I'm just saying nonsense words to y'all, but that's my whole weekend.
I don't know any of the names because I haven't played it yet. obviously, it's not out on Xbox yet because of the whole Series S.
Oh, yeah, that sucks.
So, when it does show up, I'll be diving into it, but...
Ooh, I can't wait until you get to try it. And also my friend Tana, who is Xbox, she's like, oh man, I didn't even know it wasn't on Xbox until I was like, girl, get Baldur's Gate. I was like, if I get it for you, will you play it? And she was like, yes. And then we found out it's not on Xbox. So I was like,
Hopefully by the end of the year, fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's got to happen.
They are working on it.
Congratulations.
It's like, I actually came up in my interview, one of the interviewers asked me what video games I'm playing.
Oh, nice.
I was like, it's because he saw my resume and I mentioned MAGFest and the podcasting on there, the review writing. And they were like, he's like, wait a minute. He's like, well, I'm going to check out this podcast, but at the same time, tell me about your video game. What do you like to play? And I was like, I've named some games. I'm not going to say them yet for reasons, but I was like, I play this and this. And I was like, you might have expected me to say Baldur's Gate 3 and Starfield. He goes, I did expect you to say. I was like, well, I got time for that shit. So I ain't playing them. But I didn't say shit because I'm in an interview. It's professional. But I did say, awesome. I don't have time for those games. I'm too busy working. But I want to play them. I just never have the freaking time. But I actually felt so... I mean, I was already kind of in that, okay, it's party time. Go. You're on. So I was feeling relaxed in that capacity. But the fact that while we were waiting for the last interview to show up, he just starts talking about my video game, the video game parts of my resume. I was like, wow, this dude seems like he's pretty cool. Please hire me. So
there's like math swirling around my head as I realize we can put the review writing on the resume. Oh my god.
you can
I helped that absolutely Japanese can. game. I helped localize that Chinese game about the monks, and Carrie talked me into putting it on my resume, and I swear to god it's come up in every single interview. They're like, tell me about the Chinese game you helped localize. I'm like, okay, get ready, you have to date monks or your whole family starves to death. And they're like, what? And then I just go from there. I honestly think it makes me a very memorable interview. I actually got rejected by Rockstar last year. They were like, hey, we're not gonna move forward with you, but he's like, I really loved your story about the Chinese monks, dude. And I was like, thanks, man. So now I have a connection there who gonna be the only thing he remembers me from, so that's cool.
That's awesome. Honestly, see, it's like those are such interesting elements to have on a resume. It's like, wow, tell me about that. Like, okay, sure, I will just saddle up because it's gonna get weird.
Amazing. Oh, man.
Chris, how was your weekend?
It was quite busy. My weekend was as you may know, 9 days long. I took an entire week off of work and spent like the entirety of it working on stuff that just isn't work, which is fine. But yeah, I'm going to be recording. Well, I was supposed to record a guest bass track for a friend's album last week, but it got pushed to this week. So I'm actually doing it tomorrow, which is fine. But I mean, man, sometimes, you know, when you offer to... when you offer to like do a favor for somebody and, you know, they ask you to do like the hardest thing you've ever done, it's like it's that kind of situation. But it's going to be really cool when it gets recorded and it's out and stuff, and I'll make sure to tell everybody about it. But yeah, I'm basically going to be contributing some video game base.
Basically.
Popular. Basically. Yeah. I spell it like that too when I'm talking about it. I just don't even... I don't even acknowledge that it's a pun. I just spell it like that and see if people like catch on. But yeah, it's going to be really, really fun. It took a lot of work to do. So yeah, I'm hoping that that'll be really good. And past that,
played a show on your birthday.
I did play a show on my birthday with my band Thunder People, which you can actually find on
the
internet.
How many bands
now.
Are you in? I think just three. At least three that I know of.
It's only three. There's no other bands. Yeah, Gimmick, which is kind of like we're working on kind of doing some different stuff right now. But you know, Super High Tops is like my main video game band at the moment because we're, you know, still actively working on stuff at the right now. And Thunder People is the original band I've actually been contributing bass to for over 10 years, but under different names. So, but we're about to release an album under the Thunder People name, so that's going to be the one that sticks, I think. Yeah, if anybody is interested in that, we just started our social media presence, so Thunder_People. Just think of it like Thunderscore People.
Thunderscore.
And, yeah.
Love that.
That's on Twitter, and our Instagram is, I think, the same thing, but let me check right quick. And we're going to have YouTube and TikTok, where I was actually able to score an uninterrupted Thunder People handle, so that's very exciting.
I'm disappointed that on Instagram and Threads, we don't have the SML podcast. We have the dot SML podcast. Because some other kids got the name before us.
Yeah, it sucks. Because that's happened. You know, well, with Gimmick, like, you know, we have a common single word as a band name, so never been able to just get Gimmick on anything. Gimmick band, sometimes Gimmick VGM band, whatever. So yeah, I totally feel you on that. What was I gonna say? Yeah, that's why I actually, at least for myself, even though I went 20 years without having to worry about it, having the name Liar Exaggerate taken, like, I think that it is, like, starting to be where people are trying to camp that name or grab it. There is a Liar Exaggerate on Twitter that is not me, and they just post, like, really dumbass tweets once every like 6 months, so it never stays idle enough for me to grab it again. Yeah, it used to be mine and it got hacked and taken away from me, but then I think they just deleted it instead of letting me get it again, so somebody else grabbed it.
Dude, and somebody on Xbox has Ronnie McDon, so I had to misspell that.
I'm
right on that level with y'all. No, I'm just playing. That did happen though. I complained to Joe about it.
You gotta be Donald McDonald.
Ooh, shit. From Donald Land. Oh my god, amazing. I forgot about that.
Oh yeah.
That'd be such a good name.
Or you own that game. What?
I saw we're Donnie McRon.
Well, yeah.
I have the cartridge.
We talked about this a long time ago, but the very first McDonald's video game that came out was called Donald Land, and it was a Japan-only Famicom game. And it was all in English. It's actually fully in English, but the main character, the red-haired clown of the mascot of the famous worldwide McDonald's franchise, they named Donald McDonald.
So good.
Wow.
It's pretty Donald great.
Donald. That is pretty great.
McDonald.
I played shows, practice bass, played video games. I haven't made a whole lot of progress in any of them except for the ones that we are reviewing today, but...
Hey.
Well, speaking of, should we dive into those? We got a handful of games to talk about tonight.
Let's dive in. Sure. I'm pumped for Disgaea. What? And Manu. Oh, that is
what we are starting off with. Disgaea 7, Vows of the Virtueless, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released October 3rd on Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. The demonic realm of Hinomoto is changing, and the days of noble warriors are outnumbered. Caught up in the commotion, the lazy warrior Fuji and the Bushido fangirl, oh my god, that name, Pirulika? I don't know. find unlikely allies in each other as they fight against a tyrannical regime while discovering the meaning of honor and redemption. Purnell, tell us about your time with Disgaea 7, Vows of the Virtueless.
You had a clear opener and say, so Purnell, tell us, were you able to pronounce that person's name? I'd have been like, maybe, Perillica. But yeah, so this game is, as you well know from the title, the seventh game. Actually, I guess not, I think that's the eighth game in the mainline Disgaea franchise of games. It's that eighth because of Disgaea D2. And the premise of this game is that, well, not story premise, but the general premise of this game is that, for those who aren't going to know, Disgaea 6 was the one that came out previously. I actually did talk about that on the show a few years back. But it was the first game that Nipponichi put out in the Disgaea series to attempt to use 3D models. They attempted to do a few things that were going to, hope, quote-unquote, make the series more accessible to non-tactical RPG players and people who aren't familiar with the franchise. And the end result was, for most people, the game was a kind of flop. People weren't too fond of the 3D modelings, and they weren't fond of some of the choices they made in the game. Some of which I also didn't like, though I did think the game itself was fine in the end. And Nis heard the people's dialogues and complaints about that, and they mentioned that they were looking to make some changes in their next feature in the saga and hopefully improve upon the experience that people would ultimately come back and enjoy this franchise. And I am comfortable with saying that even though this franchise isn't perfect in this release, it is a large step up from Disgaea 6, and I do find it to be a joy to play. Barring a few weird caveats that don't ruin the game, just personal things. But I'll talk about the game proper, and we'll get to that. So, as Joe mentioned in his description, this game has two main characters primarily. You have Purillica, who comes to the Hinamoto Netherworlds because she is a Hinamoto otaku, essentially, or Bushido otaku, the concept of Bushido. And she wants to come to this Netherworld to experience and partake of it. But the world itself is not what it once was from what she heard and read about. And the first character she comes across, due to a series of misevents, is Fuji, a wandering samurai who is in deep, deep debt and would love to get his hands on lots of money, which, lucky for him, Purillica is loaded. So she asks for help from him to do a job. That job pays money. He gets suckered into a contract that results in him having to help her collect all the sacred treasures across the Hinamoto Netherworlds before he can fulfill his end of the bargain and get the money that he so sorely wants and needs from Purillica. And that's the onset of the game. The format of gameplay itself is pretty part and parcel standard for Disgaea games. You walk around a portable Netherworld where a bunch of features exist, such as the item shop, the quest shop where you can take on little like side requests to get money and unlock characters. You have the Dark Assembly, which in this form takes the form of sumo wrestlers, where you request bills to pass, quote-unquote, to update and add features and effects to the game. You have the Blessed Item World, which, for those who don't know, is you are able to take items and equipment in this game and level them up by entering said items and proceeding through procedural jump dungeons. Though, at this point, I will mention one of the first changes to the franchise in this game that has premiered, in that in the old games, item worlds consisted of 30, like 70 and 100 floors, depending on the rarity of the item you were entering. But in this game, they made a change to that. And there's a reason why, which I'll get to later, in that now it goes about 10, 20, and 30 floors, depending on the rarity level of the item you're going into. So in some respects, that would speed up the process of getting through an item. And I think it will in time, once I get to like hour 70 of the game and I'm more, you know, aware of what the heck I want to do with my leveling up and grinding. But right now I'm having trouble with that because of the second change that I noticed this game had, which is in previous entries of this series, you had tactical stages where you had to go out and defeat enemies before you cleared the stage and moved on. And then during those levels, there is a bonus meter that would exist on the left side of the screen. The more combo attacks you pulled off and the more damage you did, and the like, the higher this bonus gauge would get. And depending on how high it got, you got a number of different items and experience points and money from this bonus gauge. Disgaea 7 has done away with that and instead changed it to in-level missions.
5 missions that result in a different rarity level of treasure, or maybe not rarity so much as just quality, gold, silver, and bronze. And these missions can revolve around things like only summoning men or women onto the board, only, let's say, beating enemies like levels within 4 or 5 turns, stuff like that, no one dying, and what have you. And if you complete any of those missions during the stage, you will get a reward for that. What that reward is, you have no idea until you get it. And what that will likely result in is a few things. One, it will be harder for you to just kind of just stack up and get a bunch of items early in the game to kind of outfit your characters, which is something that used to happen in previous games. Also, if you're like me, until you get used to it and learn to just walk the heck away, you might find yourself going, I got to unlock all of these missions every time. Don't do that. Don't waste your time. It is a waste of time to try to do every mission, every level. In some cases, it's actually kind of impossible early on, too. So just try to press on with the game. In fact, one other change to the game does make it a little easier to get items early on in the game, and that is a change they made to the hospital features. I realize that I'm probably talking about this heavily as a person who already knows this guy and wants to know about the changes to the new one. I feel that's actually fairly valid, because Disgaea is one of those franchises where, like, if you haven't played it yet, I mean, get back, go play Disgaea 5 and come back to this one. But if you haven't played the franchise, if you've been into the franchise, you want to know about the new one. So I'm approaching this from that angle. The hospital in the game, unlike the previous games where you just healed your characters after each battle, and depending on what thresholds of HP, SP, and revivals you got, unlock new items, this game changed that to a gacha machine, which is really weird. Every time you heal your characters and spend money there at the hospital, you earn points, which you can use to spin the gacha wheel, and that rewards you with items depending on the tier that you are currently in, like it's mid, low, high, and whatnot. And the way to advance to new tiers is to get 5 specific items during the gacha process. And if you get them all, you get a super bonus item, and then you get to unlock the next tier of upgrades from the evil gacha machine. I actually do like this a lot. It does get annoying, though, when you're like, spin, 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 and you're waiting for that one stupid item that just doesn't work. So I was like, time to go get my guys beaten up again, because I need more freaking medical money to spend my gacha to get nothing I want. But I digress. I do like the evil gacha concept. So I mentioned those few changes. Another change, this is more of a bigger change, 2 of them, actually. They added 2 new gameplay mechanics to this game. There is jumbilities now. And I'll talk about that first, followed by hell mode. Jumbilities are a feature where during a stage, there is a meter that gets filled up when people take and receive damage. You know, the usual bit from like games that involve like counters and such. And when it maxes out, any character in your party can activate their jumbility. Jumbilities are, I guess, like effects that would affect the entire map, such as like everybody counters every attack, or no one counters anymore for it while this is happening, or everybody heals at the end of a turn, etc., etc. There's a lot of different jumbilities. But in addition to that, the character who activates it becomes ginormous, so much so that they can't fit on the board anymore, and they have to kind of stand off to the side, and they're just kind of looming over the stage like, hey guys, what's going on? Similar to kaiju. Basically, that's not what they're going for. It's kaiju. While you're in jumbility state, this character, when they attack, cannot use their special moves anymore. However, they can do an attack that covers a massive area of the stage and does pretty good damage. And the way you have to attack this person is either one of 2 ways. Either A, the enemy has to approach the side of the board you're hanging off the side of and attack you from there. Or if the opponent, or in the case you, if the enemy use jumbilities, if they can attack you directly as another jumbo character, it's like basically 2 kaiju fighting over the map. And eventually someone will lose and that jumbility goes away. I don't mind this at all, though sometimes it can feel a little cheap. But that can go both ways. Either for you, when you get a jump blade that can let you attack from the other side of the map and just wipe out a whole section of guys sandwiched together, or the enemy doing it to you and just like mashing up your best characters unexpectedly. Though, you find yourself in a bonus room where all these cool items are clustered together. You have one turn to get as many as you can. You'll be glad when jump abilities are activatable, so you can just like clear the space in one shot. The other thing, hell mode, is an ability that's exclusive to the main characters who have the sacred treasure weapons equipped on them. And what that is essentially like a special status they can be in that increases their damage output. And but at the same time, though, they also get access to a special move and a special trait for the character when they activate Hell Mode. It's exclusive to them, and it activates when they fill up their Hell Mode gauge. So mess around with that a little bit. Don't be surprised if you finish most of the levels before you even get to the point where you can activate Hell Mode, especially early on in the game where you can just like throw towers of people across the room to attack the boss and kill him in one hit and move on. I exploit the crap out of that, and there's no shame in my game at all. A few things I don't like about the game, though, again, they're personal nitpicks. Team attacks. Even though team attacks have had one upgrade in the form of, whereas back in the old games, characters that stand next to each other in the form of adoring an attack can somehow join up and combine damage and all get experience, that still exists. But in this, and in fact, in this game, you can even do it with special attacks, too. But the trade-off is all the cool animation that you would have from doing team attacks are gone. You just don't do them anymore. Probably because they didn't want to animate them with the 3D models or whatever, but I genuinely miss them. I liked them a lot when I would see them, even if I did eventually just turn them off for the sake of speeding the game up. It was always nice to see them early on, but that is gone now. However, you can at least see and utilize them to your advantage to get more bonus points and experience and such like that. The other thing is that magic changes are gone. If you're familiar with what a magic change is, basically a monster turning into a gun or a sword or whatever for special attacks and shared experience and the like, that is now a done deal of a feature. So don't look for it. Ain't happening no more. But honestly, I named a few things like that, but for the majority of it, I think this game is actually pretty cool. I think the main character cast is actually much better than Disgaea 5. Now, Disgaea 5 is probably my favorite in the franchise for like battle mechanics and gameplay systems and the like, so much so that I'm still technically playing it right now. The characters were kind of lacking in that game for me. Disgaea 7's main cast, I think, is pretty freaking solid, and I do think people that play this will enjoy it. He ain't touching Valve Torres, but, you know, Fuji's got a thing going on here. He's pretty solid. Pirulika is, too, for that matter. I do like this game a lot. I do think this game is fun. It has this weirdness in the form of, like, I do still miss the 2D sprites. The 3D models have gotten better, especially as I'm playing it on the PS5 instead of, like, a Switch. But I still miss the 2D models. I don't know if they'll ever reach the point where they kind of run one-to-one in quality for me. But at the same time, I'm not going to disparage them for trying and hopefully continuing to improve their 3D modeling capabilities for their characters as well as all their animations and the like. I also wish some of the levels, like especially the item world. The item world was always fairly plain, but for some reason, the item world feels especially plain and empty in this game, and it would be nice if they did a little bit more with that. But ultimately, eventually, you'll get to the point where you're just like kind of blitzing through it anyway, so you won't notice it after a certain point. But early on, you're like, man, can you put a damn tree in this thing or something? Please. It's just dirt. All a bunch of dirt. The cat knows. Cat knows about the dirt.
Is the mic picking up the cat?
Oh, I almost forgot the most important thing for grinders anyway in this game as a major, major change. For those who are familiar with this franchise, which hopefully most of you are, if you're hearing me rambling the way I am for this game, you're familiar with the concept of reincarnation for characters, being that a character can level up to a certain point, and then you can reincarnate them to become a different class or themselves over again at level 1 with reduced stats but higher base stats. This game decided to get a little extra ridiculous and allow your items to reincarnate too. That's the reason why item worlds are smaller now. Because if every item required you to go 100 floors before a reincarnation, that might feel a little extra dumb. So instead, you go through the floors of a level. And now, in addition to innocence, an item also has, you know, characteristics or traits. And these impart various qualities, almost every quality that you would expect from a weapon, including things like how items that you eat to heal have to have a trait for healing by being consumed. If you get to the bottom of an item and an item reincarnation is running, you can ultimately turn that item into a different item and carry over properties from the previous item. So you can make shoes that you can eat. You can make a sword that gives you more mobility, all kinds of crazy stuff like that, depending on how you want to work this system. So it ultimately opens the door for you to make some crazy item combinations with weird stats and what have you. And if you got the time, you're going to spend a lot of time doing item reincarnations. In fact, that's probably the best change they've had to this game by far, is the item reincarnation for the grinder folk out there.
So not the dating site. This is for grinding, not grinding. So I'll stop rambling at this point because I've been talking a lot about this guy Seven. But what I will finalize this by saying is that if you felt put off by what Disgaea 6 did with the ridiculously large numbers and the repeated final boss at the end of every chapter and mess like that, I feel like you can come to Disgaea 7 with a little bit more of a level of confidence to yourself. They made a number of positive changes to this game. Also, there's more generic units in this game, so feel free to mess with more generics. They even added a few new ones entirely. They made good changes here that I feel like they're on the right path to getting this franchise back on the right track. I had fun with this game, and I do think you will as well.
Well, this one clocks in at $60. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a solid buy, and I'm saying that as I sit here holding the freaking deluxe edition that came in the mail yesterday.
What came in it? What's in the deluxe edition?
A really cool cup that has the main characters from all seven games on it, or from the primary seven games on it, which is pretty nice. The other stuff, I was kind of like, eh, whatever, you know, typical soundtrack, you know, art book and like, but I was all about that cup. So, yes.
Cool. All right, well, moving on. Next game is Dolphin Spirit Ocean Mission, developed by Magic Pockets, published by Microids, released September 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $29.99. Explore a fantastic tropical island and discover its deep sea secrets. Brooke, what is going on in Dolphin Spirit Ocean Mission?
Well, first I gotta tell you a story, man. Man, you know, the other day I was riding around in my boat on the ocean. Dude, it was crazy. I was having such a good time. Probably because at the beginning of the day, I was allowed to pick whether I wanted to be male or female presenting. Best of all, no matter which selection I chose for that, my hair looked really cool and had some dope teal highlights. While I ultimately chose female, I felt my whole aesthetic vibe wasn't too feminine. I felt strong. I felt cool. Everything was coming up Pava. That's my character's name, by the way. It's predetermined, so you know it's legit. Yep, things were going swimmingly. I have here in my notes, apologize to Aki. If she is here, she's not. But then, disaster struck. I saw a dolphin with a bunch of trash stuck all over his face. Literally, what the F? Furious, my heart aching.
Literally?
Literally. Oh, shit, that was really good. Jesus. Hey.
He needs to be apologizing to Aki right now.
He's on fire.
All right.
So furious, my heart aching, but also burning with pure rage, I hatched a crazy plan. I would get that trash off of that dolphin's face. So guess what I did?
Did you get the trash off its face?
Yes, Joe, thank you. I freaking did it, dude. Sweet. But it wasn't as easy as I thought. First, I had to put on my scuba gear. Then, I had to dive in the water to find the dolphin. Question, why did I have to find the dolphin when I originally saw it floating in the water, and that's how I even knew he was tangled up in trash? Answer, science may never know for sure. Maybe he began to sink down into the water as I was changing into my scuba gear. We could speculate about this all day, but we don't have time. This sweet baby dolphin needs us. Brooke, wait, was this a baby dolphin? No, it was an adult dolphin. But all animals are baby. Write that down. And now come with me to the ocean beneath the boat. I'm so tired, you guys. It's been a long day. Because that's where the dolphin is. We gotta swim around and find him. Swimming works interestingly in this game. If you're not paying attention to the tutorial parts, you will not be able to figure it out later. How do I know? Well, I wasn't paying attention to the tutorial, even though they probably gave me like two lines of instructions total. I should have been paying attention. I had to restart the game to get the tutorial to finally get it through my head how to swim around. Turns out you have to use two different sets of control pads for swimming up and down, as well as left and right. Which pads? I don't remember. And I can't restart the game to go through the tutorial a third time to write this review because you only get one save file and it just auto-saves. Oh, no. It doesn't let you modify it or anything. Anyway, so I wrote that earlier today, but then on my lunch break, I checked out a Let's Play. And it's left trigger, right trigger to go up and down, and it's the right stick to go left and right. Okay. Anyway, I solved that mystery, but I have to stick to my notes here. Back to the dolphin. You gotta swim around to find him. This game is technically open world. But not super open world, you know what I mean? I don't know if that really makes sense. It's more of a technical open world experience or exploration-wise and something that's, say, oh, like Dragon Age 1 and 2, or it almost has like lanes or just roads to explore, and you can interact with items and junk, but you're really just limited to like kind of the open part of the open world, because it's not designed with the exploration experience first. That is my way of explaining what I'm talking about using Dragon Age games to describe this dolphin game, because I just don't know a lot about the real terms for these games. You guys, Chris, please take note. Please give me any feedback for different words or reference points I can use next time for this whole open world thing. But I'm really proud of myself for at least not using League of Legends yet again for like the 10th review in a row to describe what I'm talking about. That is a game I despise, by the way. Anyway, this is an open world game. Yes, question mark. It is certainly designed with freedom in mind. Does it feel like an open world game? Kind of. It feels a little empty and pretty limited. We start to notice this when we're looking for the dolphin. We've got this whole ocean ahead of us, but it just doesn't feel like it, because if you do anything other than swim straight to the dolphin, which you're not going to do because you had to find the dolphin by swimming around, you're going to hit a wall, literally and figuratively. The literal wall you're going to hit has lots of coral. It's like a coral reef type place that we're anchored with the boat on. You'll figuratively hit it by realizing that poking around, realizing, hey, there's just not a lot going on down here. But that's okay. I wrote in some CJ Animal Crossing jokes and I'm chickening out. I'm not going to say them. You've heard of esports? Well, this is sea sports. The sport is to find the dolphin. So sorry. Chris enabled me earlier. So we found him. Now we hit X to untangle the dolphin. At least I didn't say the seaplane line. We hit X to untangle the dolphin from the trash and netting he's caught in, so he can swim freely again and be living his best life. Now all you have to do is get back on the boat. You do that by swimming to the anchor, attach the boat, pressing A again. So now we're back on the boat. Except no, we're not, because now we're docked at a beautiful island. This will most likely become our workplace slash home. It's time to meet Grandpa, who, of course, we've known for a long time, given the relation here, we go way back. We find him by talking to him. His name is Grandpa. He welcomes us to this beautiful island, Mapiroa. I don't know if I'm saying that right. We find that we are on vacation because Grandpa tells us, hey, we just missed a heck of a storm, but it's over now, so we'll probably enjoy our vacation after all. At this point, the boat driver, Hoani, who is looking pretty ripped, by the way, pipes up and says, you know, your granddaughter is so nice. She literally flew out the boat when she saw a dolphin get caught in some trash and some nets and freed it. No one asked her to do this. Grandpa's pretty pleased with you at this point. He's like, hey, that's really cool, Hoani. Thanks for letting me know. Yeah, my granddaughter loves animals. Well, now it's time to meet our marine biologist, another resident of the island. There is a conservancy set up on this island because the island's seabeds, which you've noticed are rich with all kinds of life. Animal, vegetable, whatever coral is, mineral. I'm no biologist. That is Lisa, who we are meeting now. She's pregnant. We don't really hear more about that at this time, but she references being pregnant a lot. She's the head of biologist of the association because that used to be your grandpa's job, but he passed the torch a while back. If you play these kind of cozy environmental island life games, you already know what's going to happen next. Yep. Forget about that vacation, because you're about to be given some chores and tasks. You're going to be put to work. Out of the goodness of her own heart, Lisa lets you know, hey, it's been twice the work since the storm, plus I'm pregnant. If you want to help me out, please just ask me. And I'm over here like, cool, so you want me to do manual labor while I'm on my vacation? I'm a child, by the way, it's child labor. And you're going to make me ask? You're going to make me beg for it. But classic island game. I mean, we see this even in Animal Crossing. There is no shortage of work on this island. So let's sum up all the different things you can do. You can pick up trash. The storms have swept in a ton of trash. Your first task is to pick up 20 pieces of trash from around the docks and the shore, courtesy of Oani, your boat driver. You do this by walking up to the trash and pressing A. But be careful to not pick up more than 20 pieces of trash. Don't be a hero, because if you pick up that 21st piece, you actually have to start over. And the previously collected trash does not respawn. Oh my gosh, I didn't know if I could complete this. However, I do expect them to notice this and update this soon, because there were actually other issues with this game when I first played it. And say what I will about this game, those issues are already fixed thanks to some very quick post-launch updates. Very nice. Remember, Joe, I was like, yo, I'm going to send you a picture of this weird thing the game's doing. Yeah, they fixed it. Nice. And I gotta hand it to them. That was a quick fix. Okay, back to all your child labor activities. You also must take pictures. You got a Pokedex in this game. But don't worry, because you don't have to catch them all. In fact, the game would prefer you let them roam free, because we really respect animals around here. We're going to try to own them. We are given a camera by Lisa, and this opens up a lot more controls and instructions, and even a little encyclopedia. We're instructed to look around and get a couple pictures of birds to try it out. Speaking of Pokedex, when it comes to taking pics in this game, no question, we are feeling some mad Pokemon Snap influences up in here. This game's influences are very clear across the board. Although, I did not personally find it as satisfying as Pokemon Snap, but a bit more on that later in the rating. Taking a picture will automatically give you the animal's name, just like in real life. And then you can take that back to Lisa, and she'll be like, oh, neat, that's what a white tern or whatever looks like. Perfect. It's like, what? How do you know that? But we can't even judge, because Pokemon actually goes way harder in that department, so we'll allow it this time. And y'all just create a little encyclopedia from there. There's other things to do. You get to meet NPCs. There's some folks on this island. They have designs, they have names, they have some dialogue lines. But we don't really build relationships with them outside of just plot developments. That's fine. Just letting you know, since this game is definitely targeting cozy players, there's no false advertisement here. Just clearing that up if you're curious. We already talked that the game features exploring. While it does feel a little bit empty and shallow compared to other explore-y, open-world, quote-unquote type games, the assets and the art and the environments you're exploring are pretty. They are colorful and well-made. There's really good atmospheric sounds going on in the background as well to help immerse you. And you get to explore not only land, but also marine landscapes. And it's not all biology and ecology realness, even though this game have tons of true facts going on in it all over the place. Bringing me to the final feature I'd like to approach that this game offers before we go into rating. Magic. Did you like the type of thing I can only describe as vibes matching Atlantis, the Disney movie with the glowing blue magic everywhere, almost Tears of the Kingdom, you know, color magic, and ancient machinery and mystical, mysterious, ancient underwater stuff and mysteries to unlock? No spoilers to this game's actual plot, but if you enjoy that sort of thing, it may be your junk. If you're of a certain age, which brings me to my rating. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, I have two ratings for this game. I hope that's cool. I have an adult rating, which is a lot more boring than it sounds out of context. And I have a child rating. Which would you like first?
Well, I don't. What do you think is the better one to give for? I would imagine the kids is better to give first, since they're like the target demographic.
Absolutely.
We have adults who listen to our show, and I wonder if they'd be our target demographic.
Well, let's knock it out for adult. Well,
$30. What do you think of this one?
For $30 for an adult, I call this a deny it. This is undeniably a kid's game. It's not deep enough for you if you're an adult. I'll explain more in a second. Child rating. This is a buy it. These are very different ratings. But Brooke, I hear you ask. I hear you over there. Why haven't you ever split rating like this before? Well, I should have for a couple games. I should have done it for Bratz. I should have done it for My Little Pony. But I think it's safe to say I have reviewed a good handful of games for the show now. Outside of this one and the other two I mentioned before, never occurred to me to rate differently for ages, because I consider myself a child. There was a reason that I asked for that coloring book game from you last month, Joe, because I thought I might like it. I know adults who color. I'm not even going to try to split that game into kids versus adults. I think that the coloring book has the same rating for both sets of ages. But this game, it is different experience. I just would wager adults won't enjoy it or get a lot out of it, enough to stay with it to benefit from. Like, I don't think it's worth. The plot's cool, and it's got some magic, and it's got some mysteries. But I don't think you should stick with it if you're just not enjoying the gameplay cold out the gate. I think adults will mostly be disappointed in this release if they treat it like something that's for them, but it's not. I don't think the devs hear me saying this, that they're going to be surprised or anything. I think they mostly wanted to make a really good kids game. Bright, colorful, pretty, easy. And most of all, here's why the game gets a kids buy it from me. It's very educational, but not depressing and preachy. Although this game is focused on exploring themes like pollution and the effects of global warming, and they don't pull any punches on the global warming and the possible extinction of different species, I really appreciate that. But it's still for kids. You get to explore, but it's not overwhelming or hard. It's not so deep that you can ever really get lost or confused. This game's going to guide you. You're not going to get stuck, even if you're me, unless you did not watch the tutorial with the swimming. Even a kid could get that, though, so that was just me. And while games like Animal Crossing at first, to outsiders who haven't played it, seem to be the same thing, and it fits this sort of bill. I disagree. I find Animal Crossing to be deep and incredibly malleable enough, even for releases back in the franchise, when we're talking City Folk, to definitely reward adult play and become a cult classic. I don't think this game can deliver that. I don't think that's a problem, but just a warning. I would recommend highly, though, buying it for your elementary school age or middle school aged at the oldest children, because it's a fun little game with lots to do and lots of meaningful lessons that this game does a good job of making fun. Even though pollution and dolphins getting trapped and global warming extinction, this is all really sad stuff. Final note here, last year we reviewed the game Endling. Aki and I covered that. That game is adorable, very immersive environmentally, and it's about a lot of the similar things, but I would never recommend that for a child. That is not a kid's game, M-ho. That game is fair, but deeply traumatic, and I don't care if you're 50 years old, Endling's going to make you cry. I don't think this game is going to make anybody cry, and I have to give devs serious kudos for this one thing. It's striking that very delicate balance when we've got a game talking about global warming, but it's actually going to be a positive experience for kids. And I think it's a really good one. Beautiful assets, albeit not very deep, exploration and freedom-wise, that does free it up to be very accessible to young children. And I honestly believe that that is the exact target audience for this case, this game. And to end on a sappy note, I think if all kids played this game, hot dog, the world would be a better place.
Very nice.
Word.
All right. Any other notes on the game?
Nope, that's it. Thank you for joining me of my filibuster for a simple, environmentally neato game.
Well, if you thought that was long, we have something even longer, and that is the game title to our next review. Next game talk about is Mon You. Defeat monsters and gain strong weapons and armor. You may be defeated, but don't give up. Become stronger. I believe there will be a day when the heroes defeat the Devil King. Developed by Experience and Poppyworks, published by Axis Games, released September 21st on Switch, PS5, and PC for $49.99. Defeat the Devil Kings. You've been guided to the Land of Fairies, where the Dragon King's Tower housed the hidden treasures that had brought peace to the land. But one day, the seven Devil Kings stole all the treasures and used their powers to turn the tower into a terrible dungeon. Purnell, tell us about your time with Mon You. Defeat monsters and gain strong weapons and armor. You may be defeated, but don't give up. Become stronger. I believe there will be a day when the heroes defeat the Devil King.
I requested this game because I wanted you to have to say the title.
You're an asshole.
I love that he did it again. I got what I wanted out of this. Joe, yeah, that was really good. That was
awesome.
The fact
that I did it twice is just bonus. I was like, yeah. I was like, can you request this game because I want you to have to say this title on the show? It would be great. It doesn't hurt that I also like Experience in Dungeon Crawlers, though, but that was just icing on the cake. So for those who don't know, Experience is well known these days for making quality dungeon crawlers. And this was one such game that, well, quite frankly, does not seem like their usual fare. It's very chibi style. And in that regard, some might say that means that this game has a bit of a lighter approach to it as far as challenge and just exposure and all that. And depending on how you play the game, you might feel that way. I played in a restricted way because, of course, I did, so it was a little more challenging for me. But I digress. I'll talk about the game proper now. So, in this game, you are teleported to a mystical land ruled by a fairy queen. The fairy queen needs help because the Devil Kings have stolen the mystical treasures that guide the land to prosperity and have taken them into the Dragon King's Tower, thereby dooming these people to horrible, horrible things, whatever they are, because quite frankly, this place looks really freaking pristine. But hey, what do I know? I'm just the guy that got isekai'd here. At this point, you are tasked with recruiting six heroes that are willing to follow a complete stranger into a tower filled with monsters in hopes of saving the day. And it's at this point that you are able to craft six characters, because your base party is six, so you can have plenty more and wait at the castle if you want. Not at the castle, but at the bar if you want, in hopes of like swapping them in and out. You construct these characters by using one of eight different character classes. The usual tropes, basically, the warrior, the fighter, the wizard, or sorry, the mage, the cleric, the samurai, the gunner, the monk, and I'm probably forgetting one, but I guess there's eight total classes.
And a pear tree.
Dude, God damn it.
That was good.
So, After you choose the class, you can choose from a multitude of portraits which wish to represent this character. The portraits don't particularly mean anything. You can just make them whatever you want. They have a few portraits that are meant to be related to a specific class. Like, there's actually one that's pretty funny. It's like an actual dragon warrior in the game. And if you don't believe that that dragon warrior is an homage to the franchise Dragon Warrior, then the sound that it makes when you win a battle and get certain items absolutely will make you realize that there was some Dragon Warrior homages being played in this game. But you choose a portrait. Also, like, some of the portraits are from like other games from Axis, such as, like, what was that game called? Like, Death. I don't know. I was going to say Death Note. But basically, there's a number of different characters, such as, some of the other dungeon crawlers, like Undernauts. There are, like, guest portraits in this game from games like that. And quite frankly, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, you're going to be enjoying some of the portraits you will come across as you scroll through the options. But last thing you do in constructing a character is roll bonus points. Just like in a typical game of this nature, that's not like a streamlined RPG, you get bonus points you can allocate to your characters. But if you don't like the bonus points you got, you can reroll until you get the ones you want. So it's kind of funny because if you want to just go with what you get, you can kind of have like a sort of randomized play, but otherwise you can do what I did and just keep rolling until you get 15 points on every character, because yes, you're dang right I did that. You give me the points, I'm going to use them. And once you've done that, the game pretty much sets you up on a journey to just enter the tower and do your job, which is kill the Devil King. Dungeon exploration in this game is pretty straightforward. Every floor counts as a different realm in the Dragon King's Tower, and each one of those realms is ruled by a Devil King itself. As you explore the floors, before I talk about it, I should mention one more thing that ties into how you explore these things. At the very beginning of the game, you are tasked with choosing a play type. This is meant to accentuate the way in which you will experience the game. Type A is the easiest method, in which you'll start the game with access to your mini map and your full map as you explore the dungeon, leading up to what I chose, which is type C. In which case, you start with no maps at all unless you find an item on each floor that allows you to get access to mapping, which means you have to kind of guide your own way around the dungeon and hope you can find your way back until you get a particular item, however, that lets you warp out whenever you need to, which kind of defeats the purpose of that. But it still makes it a little funny to be like, crap, how do I get back to that room that had the treasure chest in it? I better figure this out. I kind of like doing it. It draws me back to the days of like Wizardry, you get to draw your own maps up until the game gives you a map, but whatever. So basically, depending on what you choose there is going to determine what your experience is like exploring the tower. As you walk around, you'll see icons related to monsters. These monster icons can be either, you know, green ones that are walking around, they're like basic monsters that can wander the dungeon on their own. Red icons that are strong monsters that stay stationary. And bluish icons, that's just like a purplish and a blue one. The purplish one will chase after you when it sees you in the room. Sometimes strong monsters, sometimes not. And then the blue one is usually mimic chests or experience boosting enemies that will run away from you. You can only catch them if you kind of trap them in the corner. Though some bosses in the game will do this crap too, and they suck because they usually run through areas that have enemies that are trying to stop you, and you do not feel like dealing with them because you want to conserve your stats for fighting them. But that's the whole point of them being jerks like that. When you get into battles, again, battles are fairly straightforward. You have your basic attacks, your basic special moves, which you get when you level up. But leveling up for those is a little different in this game, in that you get experience points, but you also get SP points. And when your SP points meet a certain threshold, or let me rephrase that, you get SP experience. And as your SP experience crosses a threshold, you'll get a new SP point, which you can allocate towards learning skills or boosting skills you've already got. Unlike a lot of games like this, they decided to kind of split the SP point gain away from your levels, and there is a reason for that. And that is because this game has a really interesting and weird evaluation system that it plays on you for each particular floor of this dungeon. When you get to the end of the floor, you have to fight the boss. And the boss can generally be pretty strong. Who am I kidding? They're always pretty strong. They're the Devil Kings. If they weren't, that would be stupid. But when you fight them, the game has an interesting way of making you work within a certain level of reason. Because one last thing I didn't mention about those type A, B, and C elements is that there's a level cap on each floor of the dungeon, too. And depending on which of those types you choose, the 10 determines what level cap you have for a dungeon floor. So, for example, on me choosing type C, the level cap on floor 1 is level 3. If you chose one of the higher ones, the level cap might be 5 or 6, at which point the boss could become an absolute joke to beat. But the earlier thing I mentioned about grading you each floor implies that the game will grade you on 3 things. One being the level of which you defeat the boss in, as well as the number of turns it takes you to beat that boss. Then the number of floor, the amount of the floor you actually explore before you beat the boss. And there's like one other thing I'm not even remembering right now, but I digress. It grades you on 3 things. And when you get that grade, it determines, one, what bonus charges you get when you beat the boss at the end of the level. And two, probably the more important thing in my opinion, is at the end of every battle, when you win, the game grades you on battles too. And that determines what loot you get. The better your grade, the better the loot the enemies drop. But if you get an S rank on a floor, every chest you get up until the next time you get a grade for a floor will get an increase in one rank for the items you get after beating normal monsters. Basically meaning that if you want to get good gear, you better S rank all these bosses or S rank each floor so that you can move forward getting solid, sweet loot. Because quite frankly, in my opinion, equipment in this game is more important than your character level, especially with them hitting you with level caps where you can't exceed a certain point before without being penalized for it. And what that would be is that equipment grants you stats. Sometimes if you have a set of equipment, you'll get an extra bonus. But equipment in this game can level up too. If you fight with certain items and you get enough battles in, they will level up and their stats will improve. If you find items in the dungeon, you might find better versions of that item than you would find in the store or even that you found in a previous battle that can be leveled up higher than other versions of it could, which means you'll want to level that version of the weapon up and get maximum benefits from that. You'll be leveling up gear quite constantly in this game. Just get used to it. It's pretty much part of the charm. But one thing that this game does do that makes kind of things a little bit easier for people if they're kind of struggling with the leveling up and the gear and all that good stuff is that this is one of the only games I can think of, and especially in this genre, that does not punish you for dying. In fact, it rewards you for dying. Every single time you die, you get resurrected by the Fairy Queen. I hope you don't have the power that you have in the main character in Re:Zero has, because otherwise you have some traumatized party members and nobody wants that. But they get resurrected immediately, and the Queen gives them a bonus to their hit points and MP. Permanent bonuses, which means you can just get killed and get stat increases until you just don't feel like it anymore. Is there a cap to these bonuses? I don't know, because I wasn't going to sit there and just like grind my characters to death and just keep getting them buffed up. But I've never died and not gotten a boost. So it's pretty interesting that that's a mechanic they added to the game. And I believe they probably did that to kind of make the game more accessible to people, despite the gradings that they slapped in here. I do feel like, oh, one last thing I should mention. See, that's why I gotta go on Brooke's level. She gets her stuff in a row, man. Let me tell you.
Thank you, social anxiety.
Hey, thanks a lot. If that's what's causing it, it's doing you a service because you're a rock.
Thanks, dude. I have enough to share with you, so we'll get together after this and split it up there.
No. So, like, when you beat a Devil King boss, you get one of the treasures from them, and that treasure, in turn, gives you an ability that you can use for future floors of the dungeon, such as either unlocking clan skills or giving you mobility skills like breaking through certain, not all, certain walls, or the ability to jump across floors, etc. I wanted to clarify the certain walls part because we had a game earlier this year called Labyrinth of Galleria, which lets you break any wall at any time, which was freaking awesome, and I kind of wish this game did that too. But hey, different developers, different strategies, and I'm fine with that. All in all, I do feel as though Mon Yu, I'm not saying the rest of the title, is a pretty solid game. I don't even remember it. You have it written down. I don't.
Whoa. This is not okay. Hey, wait. We made Joe say it twice. You got to say it at least once, dude. I'm sorry. I got to drop the hammer. You know, I'm like Purnell fan well, number
I'm
one.
I'm gonna attempt to guess it because I don't know me the name. So we got Mungu, beat monsters up, steal their equipment, get real strong, then die a lot, get your HP back, and then do it again. But also, hey dudes, we're chibi. That's the title of the game.
Yeah, and I believe one day there will come a time when the Demon King no longer hurts everyone.
Fucking yeah! Something there like that. It is. That's the rest of it. That's the mean bean machine.
Oh, man. Raider Biz, thank you so much for coming in and dropping a sub. BX Latino, he dropped the sub earlier as well.
Thank y'all.
Thank him. Thank you both of you for coming in and dropping the subs. Love having you here.
Can we just start plating subs? That feels like such a waste.
I mean, we could.
We could plate the subs and we could serve them later. I mean, it'd be great. You know, we're just dropping subs. Just leave them for the rats to eat.
Anyway, Mon Yu, did you have anything else to say about the game, or are you ready to review or to give your verdict?
I think the last thing I would just say in the general sense, I know this is probably non-traditional in that regard, but I like the game so much, and not this, well, this game is good, but I like the game I'm going to mention so much, it's just worth saying. I am going to ultimately recommend Mon Yu because it is at its core a pretty solid dungeon crawler RPG. It doesn't, you know, blow me out of the water or nothing, but what I get here is an enjoyable time dropping dungeons. But this is also a time for me to just do that thing where I'm like, hey, if you want to try an experienced dungeon crawler and you're new to their games, as you're like, oh, this Mon Yu thing, dungeon crawlers, I am going to jump in front and say, if you haven't played them yet, do not buy Mon Yu yet until you play either Undernauts or Demon Gaze 1 and or 2. Those are like, and also, hell, there's Stranger Sword City also, which is, but nonetheless, those are the two primary ones. I'm like, you want to play those one, two, or three games because they, to me, are like freaking gold, experienced dungeon crawling gold games, gold standards. But if you have played those already and you're like, well, what about this Mon Yu game? Is it any fun? Well, there's where Joe comes in.
Well, the game is $49.99. So what is your official verdict? For Mon Yu, defeat monsters and gain strong weapons and armor. You may be defeated, but don't give up. Become stronger. I believe there will be a day when the heroes defeat the Devil King.
I believe this is actually a buy in and of itself, too. This is a good game. It is a lot of fun. I do enjoy the equipment leveling up system. And quite frankly, it's just, I like the cheeviness, too. It's fun. It's a good dungeon crawler.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, keeping the crazy names going. Chris, can you pronounce the name of this one, Chris?
I should say not. No. Sorry, I had to find
the I'll do it. Osiaberry. Horijo. Gekihori. All right.
There's more.
The rest of it.
What? Oh. Well, dang, I didn't write that down, so I don't have any.
Anna Holinsky saves the universe. All right.
Right?
All right.
Developed by Clouds Inc., published by First Press Games, released September 21st on the Switch for $16.99. Anna Holinsky is a treasure hunter, keenly drilling for her shiny gems, but one morning she is shocked to find that all minerals got stolen away by UFOs. It's time to dig high instead of deep and catch those thieves from outer space. Brooke, why don't you start off? Tell us about the game.
I will, but I'm going to warn you, I'm going to walk you through another thrilling POV, and it's going to re-explain a couple of the things you already said. Here I go. This is my final act of the day. So there I was, asleep in my bed, minding my own business, when suddenly, an explosion? OMG, I'm awake now. What was that explosion? Did anyone die? Did I die? Am I in heaven? None of these questions are anything close to what I ask. Instead, the first thing I say in this game, in a super anime girl voice, huh? Where'd all my treasure go? Distraught, I looked out the window. Yep, sure enough, the giant hole I dug in my own yard is now empty. There's no treasure in there. All my babies are gone. She actually says this. Who would do this to me? The phone begins to ring. OMG, it's the professor. He's telling me it's not just my treasure. It's all the treasure in the whole world. It's gone. I turn on the TV. UFOs have attacked the Earth and run off with all the treasure? Well, you know what? That really burns me up. But I know what to do next. I gotta talk to the professor and tell him he needs to send me up into space right now to get it back. Hi, I'm Anna. You're probably wondering how I got here. Me too, to be honest. Chris, I only played a few hours of this game. Did they ever explain why I had a bunch of treasure buried in my yard and why I know a professor in a lab that can send me up into space to shoot aliens until I get all the treasure in the whole world back?
No.
I gotta admit, I cheated and I asked Chris this earlier because I wanted to make sure. I was like, I don't think we go over this in the game, but I'm gonna actually ask this. Okay, so you're probably wondering how I got here, and you're not the only one. But there simply isn't time, because every second we waste talking about this is another second that aliens are spreading all the treasure all over the galaxy across an assortment of beautiful and strange worlds floating in outer space, filled with incredibly hype music that will definitely get your blood pumping, and lots of mining for mineral goodies, which I do always enjoy in a game, by the way. Great ASMR for that. Just stuttered 3 times. No big deal. Thanks to the spacesuit and the giant drill the professor gave me, I've got everything I need. But my equipment's weak, so I gotta power it up as much as I can, as quickly as I can. But how do I do that? I have no idea. Luckily, someone is suddenly here to explain it to me. A Pokemon? Who's that Pokemon? It's Mew. He looks just like Mew. Like, as soon as I saw this guy, I texted Chris, who is also reviewing this game. I was like, laughing my ass off, Mew is here to teach us how to upgrade our equipment. Don't worry, he's clearly an alien, but he can be trusted. You're actually like, what the F? Aren't you an alien, dude? And he's like, well, we're in space, so actually you're the alien to me, Anna. And you're like, wow, good point. You're being completely gaslit here, clearly, in the story. Wait, how do you know my name? And he's like, good point, because I came here to ask you for your help. I know we're in space, but the reason we're in space and not on Earth is because you went to space so fast that I didn't get the chance. At this point, I need to point out, I'm not really making anything of this up. I exaggerated to get us through Dolphin Spirit, but not gonna lie, but this is exactly what's happening in this game here, because this game is very, very, very funny. This game is hilarious. This game is very self-aware. It's anime madness. I'm loving it. So you're like, wow, if you're not from Earth, why do you want to help me get all the world's treasure back? And Mew, whose name is actually Meteo Hero, by the way, Mew says, you know, can I just like hate crime or something? And you're like, oh, that's legit, dude. And he's like, now we need to get you used to using your equipment, which I happen to know all about. So bam, here we are in our first level. We're floating through space, and the screen is scrolling very quickly to the left, so we feel a sense of urgency and speed. In order to kill aliens and collect our treasure and to mine minerals from space, we have to move up and down with the controller as the screen automatically moves us right, projecting us to fly at great speeds while we shoot at the same time. To either kill aliens, collect treasure, or both, we collect treasure by flying over it and just uniting it with our sprite. Am I mansplaining shmups right now? Yes, but guess why? The devs asked specifically for this game to be reviewed by 2 people. One person who has never really played shmups before and at all and is totally new to the genre. That's me, your boy. They also wanted someone to review it who actually has played other shmups and knows the right words to talk about them. That's Chris. We're going to hand it over for Chris for now. But Chris, if you need any help explaining the exploding fruit world in this game, I'm still here and I have more to say, but I will let you talk now. Okay.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, Brooke.
You are welcome.
And by the way, the way that you're supposed to, like, instead of mansplaining, you're just supposed to refer people to the game Beaker Reloaded on the on the Switch, where a bumblebee will explain what a shmup is at the beginning of the game.
Oh my god! I want to watch that like now. But
I'll share you the YouTube link. I shared it here before.
Amazing!
But it's inexplicably a shmup that explains the entire concept of shmups like right at the beginning for no reason. Oh, anyways, man. Okay. So yeah, this is a shmup, and what a shmup! It is you know, horizontally scrolling, as Brooke said. There is a you are a flying girl. You know, named Anna Holinsky, which I like that they gave her like this kind of, you know, English name when everybody else does not have that.
I love that.
Yeah, like the professor is Chikanomitsu, and he has sandals with socks on, so we love him.
He's so great.
The nearest explanation I can find to why these folks know each other and are searching for treasure, I actually just found, and it's just that they're both archaeologists. And
oh my god!
Yeah, so That's all we get, basically. But yeah, so basically the you do scroll and shoot through this game. You you know, attack enemies, and enemies drop minerals which increase in quality as you go, as you proceed through the game. The entire point of getting these minerals is to eventually find the shop that comes up every few levels. Basically a stage where there's a big boss will have a little shop, just like Fantasy Zone, if you're familiar. And you know, in that shop you can purchase permanent upgrades to various aspects of your suit. So, you know, you can purchase like a better engine, which is reduces your fuel consumption, which is also your life force. We'll talk about that in a second. You can widen your drill, quote unquote, which is basically giving you a larger shot. You can also improve your drill suit, which improves your defense and offense. And you will need this in order to survive the game. So you're really going to have to kind of stay on top of, you know, improving that. And then to kind of throw in a little bit of balance, you also have an aspect of cargo that you can improve, whereby you can hold more minerals. Because if Anna Holinsky gets overloaded with minerals, she slows down to a crawl and can't pick up any more until she either beats the level, dies, or runs into the shop. At this point, I'm going to put on my thickest shmup nerd glasses and and mansplain to you that the shop owner merchant is a fish, and his name is Space Manbo. So this is a reference to a 80s Konami horizontally scrolling shooter that only came out in Japan on the MSX2 home computer. That's whoever made this game absolutely knows their deep, deep shmup lore. So that's we amazing. Know we're in good hands here. Yeah, it's because Manbo is a kind of a mistransliteration of Mambo fish. Which is the kind of like sort of sunfish that that this thing is. And so that's why it being called Manbo is a reference, is because that's the only other thing that calls a Mambo a Manbo. Anyway, so moving on. Oh, and I'm going to read. Okay, so this game has a whole ton of unlockables that I was going to get to later, but I'm going to reveal one right now, is that as you unlock things in the game, part of it is, you know, in your collection, part of it is description cards for all of the characters and items in the game, and including every single enemy. Every single enemy has flavor text and lore in this game, which is great. The one for Space Manbo says, he is a merchant who travels across the universe after getting into an argument with his wife. He can be spotted just about anywhere. So,
oh my god.
There's your lore with Space Manbo. He is an estranged husband who is selling you gear. Anyway, so yeah, the whole loop of the game is to go as far as you can into the level, collect as many minerals as you can, purchase upgrades until you have enough upgrades that you can actually take down the many mini bosses and the few but mighty large bosses of the game. So yeah, this is a game that you can basically, you know, it's a little bit roguelite in that way, but it's not, because the stages are very, very set. But, you know, the incremental improvements to get better at the game is basically the part of the game that kind of draws you back in, you know? So that kind of helps to mitigate the frustration that a lot of players will have with shmups, where, you know, it's very hard, but you're expected to get better. But in this one, you're actually expected to grow and eventually overcome stuff by making it easier, by leveling up. So a little bit RPG. Anywho's. So yeah, you do go through several levels, and actually, I'm going to hand it back to Brooke for a bit so she can talk about her experience.
Oh, my big highlights of this game. It's not that I've never played a shmup before. I just I almost want to say I've watched other people playing them. I'm familiar with it, but this sort of game normally doesn't keep me going. Love the sound design and music, and I really love the heavy emphasis on you really need to be upgrading your gear if you want to get very far in this game at all. I know there's a multiplayer component, personally. Did not realize that until today, Chris. I don't know if you tried it multiplayer.
Nah, I never try anything multiplayer.
But I just found... Dude, I found the equipment and the upgrades to just, like... I'm going to be honest, I don't want to play this game all day because it's not my thing. But I like this game a lot better than the other games of the genre. And I find it to be maybe not female targeted because I think Anna would appeal to male and female players. She's really cute, but she's also got that thing going on where she's like a super, super excited dog girl who is just so happy to help. But she's also like very angry, bark, bark, bark. And she's gonna chase down the aliens, and she's always anime girl screaming. And I love the professor as well. I actually replayed a bit of this on my lunch break today because I wanted to replay the beginning, which I can do in this game without losing my save, Dolphin Spirit. Okay. So that was nice for me. I just want to say one thing. The old man, he shows up on the phone, and I didn't notice this until I played it the second time, but the picture you have taken of him on the cell phone, he has his tongue sticking out and he's giving two-piece signs, and didn't even notice he had socks with his sandals until Chris pointed that out. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Oh no, that's okay. Yeah, I was going to speak to the fact that one of the things that you'll love or hate, or maybe both, about this game is that Anna Holinsky is the ultra-wired anime female, like, yeah, kind of cliche. She is constantly talking, and I don't mean in the game. I mean, she's constantly talking in the menu. Anytime that you are leaving this game running, she is talking, and she'll repeat phrases. She has a pretty deep pool of phrases, though.
Yes.
But yeah,
to be fair, the store page does warn you about this.
No, I know, but I'm letting the people know.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever seen the anime Excel Saga from back in the day?
I actually haven't.
Okay, it's basically reminds me very much of the protagonist of that show.
I'm sold.
Yeah. Excel Saga is a little bit more fourth wall breaky, but I mean, this is still, this lady is, like I said, she is constantly motor mouthing, and that's pretty cool. Like, I got used to it. The one message I sent Brooke about this, you know, because I wanted her to gather her own thoughts before I started trying to influence them, but I did send her a message. My God, will this woman ever shut up?
That's the real subtitle for the game.
So, I'm not. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. No. You first.
Okay. Well, I was just going to continue on about the game. So basically, I did play this until I beat it. So I actually have completed this game.
How long did that take?
A couple of days. But, you know, once very I started cool. really buckling down on like the growth, once I got into the growth loop of it, I just kept playing and kept playing and kept playing and then eventually beat it. There are 25 areas in the game which incorporate, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 planets. Yeah, 5 planets. Each planet, of course, is going to have like the big boss on it, and each area is just going to have like different little challenges here and there. And of course, the planets are very varied. You know, we've got that, Brooke already mentioned, the fruit planet. Then, you know, we got an ocean planet, the world's most adorable Cthulhu planet. And then the rest are a surprise. You can just, you know, play the game yourself. But once you actually do beat the game, it actually has like a cool story with some twists and turns in it, which is not unusual for shmups. Honestly, I would say a couple of the moves are like so kind of not cliche, but let's say they've been done to the point where I could identify them as references to other games. I'm like, they got this from this game, they got that from that game. But once you beat it, I don't think this is spoilers because they actually show this like in
the
menu.
Yeah, they show it in the menu. I know where you're going with this because I didn't beat it and I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's shaded out in the main menu until you beat the game. But among other difficulty modes and a time attack mode that you can get for beating it the first time on normal, you unlock Umelda mode. Umelda is the kind of the bad guy of the game. You know, she's the one who stole the crystals and stuff. She identifies herself within like the first couple of levels, so this is not really spoilers. She's like the, you know, the antagonist that you're hunting down, and you can play through the entire game as her in Imelda mode, but when you switch to Imelda mode, it changes everything. It actually reloads the entire game. The entire menu has changed. Imelda is a different kind of ship, quote unquote, than Anna is, and the levels are different. Like, it's basically an entire built-in sequel to this game.
That's really
with
cool.
With its own unlockables. So there's a lot of content that's just kind of hidden right under the surface of this game, and I was really impressed by that once I, like I said, once I beat it. So, dang.
Yeah, before we go into rating. Here.
Love it.
Oh, man. Come on, y'all. What are y'all, a bunch of treasure-stealing aliens up in here? Dude, I don't know what anime you're talking about that made Purnell go full send. I'm not familiar with that female character, but I've seen a lot of anime. I think we can all agree with that. And I've seen this character archetype done a lot, like the Motormouth lady who's like, you know, I'm not trying to be mean, but like she's supposed to be really ditzy and kind of like tunnel visioned and dumb, but very, very, very motivated. We see her all the time. And I think this is one of the funnier takes on that. Mm-hmm. Like, normally I find that character to be annoying, especially if it's like a male marketed game and I feel like, well, we don't have anything else going on except stupidity, enthusiasm, and then some weird thing like brutal strength. But I think that like this game, I'm like blanking on the word, it's like spoofing that, it's taking it to another level, and I find the writing of this game, it's like
subverting.
Yes, there's like a joke in every single line. There's jokes in the menu, and like you said, her like word sentence bank. It's very deep. So if you're hearing this being like, oh, I normally hate that kind of thing, like me too. And I found this game to be so funny. Like replaying the intro on my lunch break and talking to Chris, I was like, dude, this game's like it's really killing it. I think it will be funny to you if you haven't seen a lot of anime, but I think. I can see why. At first, when I loaded the game up, I was like, oh my God, why did I do this to myself? But then I was like, I can see why they wanted someone who's not familiar with these games to play it, because even if you're not going to end up falling in love with it and like playing it for 2 days, like there is a lot to like here. And I just found it. I found it to be very self-aware and hilarious. Yeah.
Well, the game clocks in at $16.99. What are your verdicts on this one?
I'm going to give it a buy it.
Nice. Yeah, I also agree. This is a very, very good shmup that, like I said, at first I was like, I don't know, there's not a lot of variety to the shots. It has that thing I don't like where it's got the power-up that's on a timer where it, like, switches between power-ups and stuff. Like, there's so much that just putting your fingernail on the surface, like, it almost seems like it would have been like, I don't know, it's kind of middling. No, yeah. Once you get into it, like I said, the first time I saw Space Manbo, I was like, oh, okay, never mind. They're serious. And and then once I beat the game and it unveils this whole other ass game, I was just like, good Lord. So yeah, it's don't let this one pass you by. It's definitely a buy it for shmup fans, apparently old and new alike. So I guess their strategy of having us both review it was a success.
Yeah, I even came at Chris last week and I was like, LOL, why would they have me? But then the more I played of it, I was like, oh, okay. And I have to say, like, I'm going to consider it a buy it for anyone who likes shmups. Would I tell myself to buy it expecting a ton of gameplay where I'm going to actually love the gameplay? Like, not really, but this makes it a buy it for me because if I were, you know, I cohabitate with my partner, we're in San Francisco, so we can only really afford a very small space. So we end up overhearing each other's video games a lot. Sometimes we end up, like, one of us ends up, like, walking through the room and sitting down on the couch because somebody's like, oh, this is really hilarious. And I can safely say after even just the first couple hours of this game, like, I would sit there and watch Carrie play this. I would be like, I don't really want to shoot stuff, but this is really funny. I think it's got some super good anime goodness in here. And I was just, overall, I was really impressed by this.
The only thing I would ask for this game would be an English dub and put Erica Mendez as the main character. She's, I don't know, she's in a ton of things, but I don't want to go into it right now. Just look her up, Erica Mendez. She has, like, that voice. She has that squeaky, overexcited voice, and she does it really well. Like, that's what I was picturing in my head. I was like, I want to hear like this in English, honestly.
I'm not familiar with it. I just
want to add, you need to watch XL Saga.
Okay, if y'all both recommend, like, I'll do it.
I haven't seen enough of it to know whether it's like that great or not, but I did watch some of it, and it definitely, it rings these bells.
It's one of those shows where it's like, it's definitely one of those shows where it could go either way. She could come away hating the show entirely, but it is extremely, like, it makes fun of a lot of tropes. And yeah, at least in your case, there's one particular episode I think you would really love where the main character is basically playing a dating sim throughout entire episode. And I didn't even know what dating sims were at that time. And I was like, this is hilarious. I love it. What is going on?
So, yeah, it was like making fun of this stuff like back in the day, like before these jokes would have even made sense in America. So,
yep, it was freaking great.
I know we rated it. Can I say just one quick thing before we move on? I didn't understand. Oh my God. Sorry. My rabbit just like beat it across the whole living room. He's freaking out.
Because he wants to be bad.
Oh my God. Yeah, he does. I didn't realize, you know how in my little intro I wrote us, I keep talking about treasure. That's because the game is calling it treasure, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize for a very long time in this game that the treasure is just minerals. And that, so it makes sense, Chris, that you know they are archaeologists, because it turns out that's what was buried in her yard. She just had a bunch of rocks and like special stuff in her yard.
Which I kind of wonder if they should have called it archaeologist or mineralogist.
Dude, yes. I don't know if I agree with archaeologists. That may be just like a weird localization thing. But yeah, just fun to note. And once that hit me, I was just laughing maniacally. And I thought that was really funny. And I had to add that to my notes.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Am I allowed to move on?
Yes, yeah. Please.
Yeah. Yay.
I'm gonna also move on. I hope you guys have a wonderful night. I gotta go.
Oh, yeah.
Have a good night, Brooke.
Later, thank you
for the awesome reviews.
Do you have any final words, Brooke?
Wow.
That's a good word.
What did Jose Canseco tweet? Hold on, let's do this.
He's been going off lately.
Sure, I haven't checked him in a while. I only check him anymore when Joe asked me about any last words. Gianna's custom nail set. Eat your heart out, boys. Oh my God, he posted his daughter's nails. He's supporting his daughter. Next tweet is, look me up on Cameo. Okay. All right, I'm gonna go, y'all. It's been wonderful. Thank you for sticking with me, even though I've been awake for a very long time and on 300 milligrams of caffeine. Thanks for sticking with me.
You should check out Dubby Energy Drink.
Hey, I'm gonna try out that big drink. Okay.
You can use the coupon code Gaping Beehole to save. And remember, 10%.
The B is for Brooke. Okay, later, you guys.
God, good night.
I wouldn't have tried to own that personally, but I admire the bravery.
B is for bravery. But next game, Pizza Possum, developed by Cozy Computer, published by Raw Fury, released September 28th on Xbox Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $6.99. Live your ultimate possum dreams in a snackable, chaotic arcade game focused on eating as much food as you can in single-player or local co-op without getting caught. Purnell, you're going to talk about this one, but our friend Andy Sperry wrote in some quick notes on it. I'm going to read those quick. He says, ride solo as the playful red possum or team up with a friend played by the sneaky blue raccoon and live out your dreams of gluttony in a chaotic world of food and fun. Roam each area and eat as much as your little body can hold to gain enough points to advance to the top of the mountain. Use your surroundings and a wide range of items to hide and sneak your way past patrolling guard dogs, distract and escape for the last crumb of delicious pizza, but don't get caught. Pizza Possum is a clever adventure strategy style game, which to me felt like an indie take on a classic arcade game with a hungry yellow creature and some colorful ghosts. I enjoyed this game and would recommend it to others. Purnell, what are your thoughts on Pizza Possum? Did you enjoy it?
I think it's a fun, dopey little game to mess around with for a period in time, and it gives you what it says you're going to get, which is basically a possum.
Pizza and a possum.
It's a possum who loves pizza. But he can't buy his own. He needs to steal it from other animals that have pizza. And I just find it kind of hilarious that the whole point of the game is to reach the pizza at the top of the village. but you're eating food items as you explore to open doors to get further into the village, food items of which include other pieces. So you're breaking your neck to get this pizza while ultimately eating other pieces to reach the bigger pizza. It's interesting. But the idea that this is a pretty straightforward game. You're basically a posse. You start at the bottom of a, like, basically like a European villa, and you're trying to ascend to the top to reach the piece that you want to steal. And in the process, you have to evade guards who are actually protecting this pizza, I guess, or this community in general. And if they catch you, it's game over. So as you're running around, you'll see food lying all over the place. Fish, pizza, cakes, berries, the works. And your task is just to run by and just yank them off of their perch and consume them. That's what you're doing. As you eat a certain amount, you'll access a key. The key allows you to unlock a door to progress further into this villa. And it's a pretty large facility. Like, you're going, there's like multiple paths you can take to get through this thing. And you'll pretty much end up going the way at which you seem, you know, most reasonable to get to the top. However, to find, there's 20 hidden pastries hidden around this thing. So you may find yourself backtracking through areas that are further down the villa as opposed to further up, because you're going to be seeking out where these pastries are if you're a collect-them-all guy like myself. Food, if you eat too much of it at a time, it will slow you down. You get a little chubby, and you can't run very fast. So be mindful of that, because that will make you more susceptible to guards. If a guard does see you, though, what can you do? You can run, but they will catch you. So what you want to do is look for a place where you can ultimately hide out and, you know, stay perched behind in a bush, or just run around the building. Hopefully they'll lose track of you beforehand. And then when that happens, the heat dies down and you can pursue again. If you're getting chased by, this is what I believe was going on, because it's the only time I ever saw this pop up on my screen. But if you're being chased by multiple guards at once and you're considering you're still eating food as they're chasing you, you get a score bonus for that. So it's almost like Grand Theft Auto Stars or something. Like, oh man, the heat's on, but I'm hungry. Ain't got time for that. You'll get bonus points for that. If you die, or rather if you get captured, that is instant game over. However, you will take all the score points you've accrued up to that point. It will go into a collective pool, and for every time you cross a certain threshold, you'll unlock one new item that can be found during your adventure, which can be used with the press of the A button to give you a nice little effect. It kind of just give you a little bit of a speed booster and things like that. It just kind of change the effects of the game and give you a little bit more variability to your play experience. Yeah. Also, I want to mention also that you don't technically have to start at the bottom every time you fail. There are checkpoints throughout this thing where you can start from those. But if you do that, your score resets to zero. So if you're going for a high score, which, to be perfectly honest, you kind of should be, because the vibe I get from this game is that it's intended to feel like an arcadey game. Go for the high score and call it a day. So in that capacity, you might find yourself wanting to just ignore the checkpoints and just get to the top. It's a pretty simple game, and I'm fine with that, because it's at a cheap price point. It gives me what I said I wanted to get when I saw the trailer, which is ridiculous nonsense happening on my screen with animals that, when they're looking around to search you out, they actually hum tunes, which honestly is pretty adorable. Like, the dogs go burp, 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 and then when they pause them to eat, he's like excited every time he's eating things. It's very cartoony, very silly, and very fun. Eventually you will probably get tired of the gameplay, because again, it's a simple game. It's not gonna, you know, tax your mental processes and make you keep you guessing.
But yeah, this the isn't time something it lasts, that you're gonna like, sit down and marathon for like 10 hours.
But that's my point, though. It's a simple game that's meant to give you a good time until it doesn't anymore. And yeah, at that point, you already got your money's worth, and that's fine. If this were like a $50 game, $40 or even $30 game, I'd be like, yeah, this needs to go on a deep discount before it's worth some money. But at the price point they hit it at, this is a solid play and a fuck it, why not, in both capacities. Like, I would buy this game for the price they're offering it for, just for the ridiculousness that I get out of it. 2 hours is plenty, and you can get more out of that easily.
Well, it's $6.99, so your official verdict?
I think it's a fuck it, why not, because I want to say that. I haven't done that in a while, but it's honestly a fun game, and it's cheap enough that it's worth it for, like I said, a good 2 hours of fun running around doing nonsense, or if you're going for high scores, even better.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, one final game to talk about tonight is Firefighting Simulator The Squad, developed by Chrono Software, published by Astragon Entertainment, released September 28th on the Switch for $34.99. Get behind the wheel of an officially licensed fire truck, grab your hose, and fight realistic fires to save lives. Discover over 40 diverse deployment locations spread throughout a huge city inspired by the North American West Coast. Equip yourself with authentic firefighting gear such as helmets, firefighter boots, and breathing apparatus from well-known firefighting equipment manufacturers. Every second counts. Your city needs you. Chris, how many fires did you put out?
Sorry. Got a little bit of the black lung from... No, I'm just kidding. A little bit of that.
Someone wasn't wearing a breathing apparatus.
Yeah, I know. A specially licensed one. By the way, I hope I don't sound weird. I'm holding my microphone because Cricket jumped into my arms, and so I'm holding a kitty while doing this review. That's right. I do it all for you, the SNL podcast. Okay, so Firefighting Simulator, The Squad. This one, sorry, I'm like, I think I'm scraping the base of the microphone. Anyways. Yeah, this is a firefighter simulator. It is not the first one on Switch, nor will it be the last. However, I just want to call out real quick, though, that while looking at, I was actually just, you know, scouring the eShop for deals, and I ran across this other firefight simulator game, and I just love the title so much, because it's a... It's from a particular publisher. I'm not going to say they're a shovelware publisher, but I will say that almost all their games are $14.99 marked down to $2. But yeah, Midnight Works. They called this game Firefighter Car Fire Truck Sim Driving 2022 Simulator. It's just all different words.
Interesting.
Firefighter Car Fire Truck Sim Driving 2022 Simulator. Anyway. So yeah, this is a better product, I think, than that. But yeah, Firefighting Simulator The Squad is a firefighting simulation game, not an ultra realistic one, and thank God, because fires are friggin' scary. That's like more so than being like murdered or eaten by sharks. The one thing that I actually do kind of have a constant like awareness of is like fire hazards and things like that. So, and I have friends who have gone through that terrible ordeal before. So yeah, firefighting is like a weird thing to want to actually get involved in. But yeah, this is, basically a thing where you fight fires and stuff, but the squad part of it means that it is a multiplayer experience, which is kind of like, I think, the main selling point of this particular game. But yeah, so what you do is you basically choose a stage, where there's a fire, and you click on the fire, and you actually get into your truck, and you actually drive your truck to the fire. This is done in a very kind of... definitely reminds me of like the early Grand Theft Auto stuff, you know, where you're just kind of jumping in and just kind of driving around and maybe running into everybody. But there's no, fortunately, I've dragged a couple of cars across the oncoming lane a few times, and it actually has no real penalty, except that you are rated on your speed. I believe that's the only rating they give you with your getting to the scene of the fire. Thing there. Everything's rated in this game, by the way. But yeah, so you get into your truck, you drive, follow the map over to the scene, and then once you're there, then basically your AI, other firefighters, will start to go to work. You can direct them to do certain things, but for the most part, they're going to work on fighting the fire. Your task is to basically go through a checklist of things that you need to do for that particular fire. Kind of obvious stuff, like if there's people in the building, you got to rescue them first, while your, other dudes are, spraying it with the hoses. But, so, you basically interact with things, usually by holding down the Y button, to interact. And then the ZR button is kind of like your attack button. If you have, something equipped, then you can break down a door. There's multiple different tools, either on the truck or just kind of laying around that that you can use to get where you need to go. Very imperative that you kind of learn where this stuff is on your truck if you want to get a good score, because it took me for freaking ever to find the axe. And then finally, I stumbled across the exact, you know, little dot where when I aimed at it, it was like the compartment where the axe is. And I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, I needed it to bust down a door because I guess my guy's legs don't work. But yeah, once you get that, you just basically run around in a third person, you know, view. Like I said, your priority is, of course, to rescue people who may be passed out in the house. But, you know, like I said, depending on the stage, there could be other things as well. Not saying that human life is being prioritized low in other stages. I'm just saying that there it might just be a whole different thing. Like there's a park on fire at some point, for instance. So yeah, once you do that, it's basically kind of going through the motions of like, you know, for instance, if you want to join in the hosiery, then you got to like assemble your hose and you got to hook it up to the, you know, the truck or the fire hydrant or something like that. And like I said, there's basically aiming reticules. Like if you're fighting a fire, then little flame dots will appear and that's kind of like your targets where you're hitting. You don't just like, you know, spray the hose into like a flame and just hope that does the trick. You actually do kind of have to, you get like real feedback graphically as to whether what you're doing is effective or not. And yeah, as you basically, you know, do all the tasks, once the fire is successfully fought and extinguished and such, then you win and the game will rank you on your speed, your effectiveness. It will award experience points, and when you reach a certain level, then you can access more things, more levels and such, and repeat. So yeah, that's basically the core of the game. The other aspect to it is that you have online multiplayer. So you can actually get with a crew and, you know, of friends, or, you know, you can seek out people on the internet. Obviously, I can't, I was not able to get an online match going because this is a brand new game. So, you know, I wasn't able to test that, but I did watch like some other versions of this game where people had done that, and it looks pretty cool. You know, kind of shows their name over their head and stuff. And there's not really a way to yell at people on the Switch, I don't think, unless you have the app. But I'm sure, you know, if you got your like little Discord group or something, then you can do it that way. But either way, it's pretty cool. The only thing I'll say is that the game does have, you know, I'm not going to say it like it has like real performance issues. It's just more like weird quirks about it. You know, sometimes object collision is not what it appears to be. And like there's different things, like, you know, if you're using your axe to bust up a door, for instance, if there's like one shred of door left, your guy cannot walk through the entryway. So, you know, you kind of have to follow the rules in terms of like, you know, doing stuff. Like I actually put down my axe and tried to enter a house after I had chopped down the door, and it's because this one part of the door, which was just like about a foot wide, was left in the doorway. My guy could not walk through the invisible wall. Other things like, you know, if somebody, like you're using a really high powered like fire hose to, you know, to fight fires, somebody can just walk in front of it and it doesn't do anything, you know, like there's no collision detection for the water or anything like that. So, yeah, it's like little quirks like that. It doesn't feel like it's a ultra realistic game. I would probably consider this more of an arcade game than anything. The other thing is that there's no way to have your character just run. Like you got to click in one of the sticks to get your character to like do a light jog, but there's like no urgency otherwise. Like your character just saunters up to like a inferno, you know, where people are possibly dying, and he's just kind of like oop-de-doop-de-doo, you know, until you click in the little thing. But, you know, like, again, these are just little quirks. Frame rate does drop when things get too busy. What else is new? I noticed that also happens in the other versions of it, too. So that's not a Switch-specific thing. You know, it's not, it's definitely not AAA, but it's a fun time. I like simulators. I own no less than 2 forklift simulators on my Switch that I bought. I didn't review them. Except I did review them because I compared them in a stream on Labor Day. But I mean, I didn't review them, like, get keys for them or anything like that. So I like simulators, and this one actually does scratch that itch. I quite like the action of it. I like that it's not too intense. Again, I find fires to be too scary. I don't want to, like, you know, I don't want to have to deal with a realistic fire. I like these little, you know, it's just a building. There's people just kind of laying on the ground. You got to pick them up and get them to the little, you know, hospital area. Oh, by the way, that's another quirk, is that if the person is still conscious and you can get them out of the house, like, let's say they're locked in a bedroom, but they're not passed out yet, but they're trying to get out. So, you know, you get in there, you tell them to follow you, like kind of Skyrim style, you know, like they just kind of follow where your guy goes. You can't just get them to freedom and have it count. You have to take them to a ambulance, like a little square on the ground, the same place you would take the unconscious guys, and you have to make sure they stand in that square. Otherwise, they'll just stand there in the street and be like, oh, I don't know what to do. And the game won't complete. So anyway, I thought that was just funny. That wasn't like inconvenient or anything. I'm just like, it really speaks to what this game's kind of going for in terms of like goals and stuff. But anyways, so yeah, it was pretty good. A little few issues, but you know, I like that there's multiplayer. That's actually something I would like to try out on this game. But again, I, you know, there's no possible way I could have done it for the purposes of this review. So, you know.
Yeah, well, as it stands, the game clocks in at $34.99. What are your thoughts?
I mean, that's a little steep, to be honest. Like, you know, but the only thing I will say is that there is a lot of stages in this game. Like I said, there is growth and like unlockables and stuff. So, you know, they do their best to give you the most game for your money on this one. And, you know, having said that, other firefighter game that I had talked about earlier is $2. So it's like pretty all over the place in terms of firefight sims. I'm going to go ahead and give this one a try it, because I can't directly speak to the quality of the online multiplayer, but I will say that that's the idea that I think kind of elevates this one. So I'm just going to set it at try it. I'm going to say it's good quality. It's not perfect, but you know, seems to have some good ideas going for it, and we'll leave it at that.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. We made it through. My drink was good. My dubby was gone in like minutes. that was some good stuff. I'm gonna probably buy more. Big thanks to the two of you for being here, hanging out. Big thanks to Brooke for coming on, doing her thing. Music this episode, I don't know what to play. Does anyone have any suggestions?
Something involved with dubs.
Dubs, let's see, the 1UPs have a Double Dragon song that's kind of dubsteppy, and I call it Wubble Dragon.
Oh yeah, there I like go. That one. Yeah, do that one.
Cool, so here's the 1UPs. Does anyone have any final words?
Little double, do you?
Here's the 1UPs.